Liz, I am so happy that Framebridge is a sponsor of this episode of Satellite Sisters because I have the perfect job for Framebridge.
Oh, you have something special that requires framing? Preservation Liz. For the ages?
Yes, I do, Liz, because my book, The Marriage Sabbatical, was named a People magazine pick of the week. And guess who is on the cover of the People? My girl, Valerie Bertinelli. I mean, I want the magazine, and then I want to cut out the special, you know, mention of my book all in one frame. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
That's going to be fantastic. Plus, there's your head in a bubble. You have your book, the recommendation of your book, your head in a bubble, and Valerie Bertinelli. Framebridge it, baby.
Right. I mean, Framebridge is so good at framing unique and interesting items you want to display on your wall. Yeah. It's just used to be difficult to get that stuff framed and expensive, but Framebridge makes it so easy. So if you have travel souvenirs or original artwork or hotel key cards or menus or tickets or wedding invitations, Liz, do you want to frame a license plate? I know who can do it for you.
This is exciting, Lee, and welcome back, Framebridge.
And we love Framebridge because the quality is super high. Liz, both you and I have gotten personal things framed at Framebridge, and we display them proudly in our house because it's easy and affordable. You know exactly how much you're going to pay up front. The frames are gorgeous. You get fast service, free shipping, and it's super great for gifts. And guess what, Liz? Happiness guarantee. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So Framebridge, get ready because my Valerie Bertinelli, People Magazine, and Marriage Sabbatical Pick of the Week mention is coming at you for framing. See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's framebridge.com.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters.
What's a satellite sister?
The person you call when the best thing in your life happens or the worst.
The person that gets you up, gets you going, and gets you through.
And every once in a while, changes your mind.
This podcast is part pep talk, part weekly check-in.
Like grabbing coffee with a friend.
Thanks for being here. Welcome to the Satellite Sisterhood.
Hey, you're listening to Satellite Sisters Remix. Thanks for being here today. I'm Leon Dolan in Pasadena, California. I'm here with my sister, Julie Dolan, in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Julie, how you doing?
Hi, Leon. How are you?
I know we haven't talked that much lately.
I know. We sort of stopped production in December, and then we quit talking to each other. Okay? That's not right, sister.
That's not fair. I mean, I've been head down trying to get this book done.
Yes.
So our usual chat time is mornings, and I've been
We have been chatting, but I missed you, Leon. I missed you. I know. I just got to hurry up and finish that book. So,
all right. Okay. There's good news on that front. More on that later. All right. But we are here with another remix episode. We put together a Valentine's themed show. Now, Jill, you know, the irony with Satellite Sisters is we did almost nothing about sex, dating, love, or relationships on our show.
Yes. Yes. I think that was one of our underlying missions, part of our goal. I think we said that in the mud bath. I am never talking about sex, no matter what.
So we really had to search far and wide for segments that fit under the Valentine's Day theme. But I think we put together a fun show. But first, what's on your mind? What have you been thinking about lately?
Leon, well, here's what I'm thinking about. Do you realize that this year, Ash Wednesday and Valentine's Day are the same year? Okay, same day. So I just want you to just imagine you're in your sexy teddy and then you've got ashes on your head. That is going to be a tough look. And then add to that, Leon, it's the Lunar New Year. So you got to do something with the dragon. Okay, so you got ashes, a teddy, and a dragon, Leon.
That's quite a look for you, Julie.
I don't know, Leon. I don't know. It's going to be a combo. I want to wish all our satellite sisters, good luck with that. Okay.
And misters, because it's such
And misters too. Satellite misters. Yeah, that. Ooh, I don't know.
It's a challenge for them. All right. Thanks for that reminder. Reminders on all front. Thanks, friends. Thanks, Jewel. Hey, have you been watching it all? CNN has this documentary on Martha Stewart. I think it's all aired now, but you can find it on their streaming service, a 3-part series on like the true story of Martha Stewart or the real life of Martha Stewart.
Yes. Yes. What do you think, Liam?
You know, here's the thing. You know, we have a weird fascination with Martha Stewart, but I think if you're not familiar, listeners need to know, we literally grew up around like the corner from her. She was the local mom / caterer that made good. And at many points in our teenage years and early 20s, our lives intersected with hers. People worked for her. She catered events. My mother worked with her on a big charity event. I took ballet with her daughter. So the fascination goes deep. And I did enjoy many of the really early day visuals, like the Jezebel, the Laura Ashley dresses. I mean, I think it's important for people to know that Martha's had many lives. Oh, that's what it's called, The Many Lives of Martha Stewart. Here's what I would say here. So Martha, you know, we know she's 80, 81. What I find fascinating and continue to find fascinating is that she has not gone away. You know what I mean? I mean, one of the biggest complaints about women over a certain age, and that age is like 50, is that they, quote, disappear in people's eyes, right? Mm-hmm. That no one's interested in their lives anymore. She, like Madonna, she has just refused to go away. Madonna always says, the greatest sin of my music career is not quitting. And I do think Martha Stewart is the same. She keeps reinventing herself because, as we know, she has many, many interests now that we many, many interests and she can. So I admire that spirit that she refuses to go away.
Lynn, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, I think Martha is part of our DNA. That's what I said. You know, we grew up with her. But you're right. I mean, that she just continues on with her brand and herself. And I'm all for it, Lynn. So, you know, whether this documentary, she didn't participate in this documentary.
Right.
But, you know, it's always good to check in on Martha. We wish her well. I had a little period in, you know, where I wanted her to go to jail because I felt like she had broken the law. But she did her time. She came out in the poncho. She's good to go, Lance.
Yeah, right.
And there she is, just continuing on. So good for her and good for Martha. And let's embrace Martha. That's right.
It's not too late. It's not too late to get on the Martha bandwagon. All right. In this show, what do we have here? Well, in our quest for sex and dating and romance, we have a few key things. First of all, we have always another thing that's part of our DNA is the wedding announcements in the New York Times. So we have a good segment. It's like a series of 6 wedding announcements that we love. So that's good. That's good. Very positive. We have a review of Sex in the City, the movie, the first movie.
Oh, wow. By our wonderful sister, Sheila, who did Entertaining Sisters. And there's really no one more qualified to give a review of Sex in the City than Sheila, don't you think?
It is. I mean, first of all, her movie reviews, if you're not familiar with them, they're about 1/3 movie, 2/3 Sheila. So I think that's important to know. And she does she goes around the horn for her opinions on the movie. And then it's a little time capsule because this was the first movie and now there have been 3 and they were increasingly bad. And then there was the weird remake TV show.
Ooh, yes.
Cringe watch. But this was sort of a fresh look at the Sex and the City movie. And it's very funny. And she has a lot of pinpointed things to say about the women and big and New York City. So it's fun to hear that. There is a little, I need to explain one thing though. At the end of that, she teases her own Sex and the City type show. That became The Summer of Love. She did an internet dating show with Brad Garrett. Okay, this is going way back. Do you remember that?
I mean, how is that possible? That was something. So, Summer of Love, Sheila and Brad Garrett.
Oh. So if you're listening to this, that's what I want to explain. That's what she's teasing. So I'll try to dig up information on on that whole thing for later remixes. Also, Julie, we have an interview with Calvin Trillin, the great New Yorker writer who wrote an absolutely beautiful book about his wife, Alice, who was a frequent, you know, character in his stories in the New York Times, in the New Yorker, and she had just died. And he wrote this book about his wife, Alice. And this interview really almost brought, it just brought cheers and chills to me, because it was great to have him in studio listening to him talk about his lovely wife. He was so charming.
I mean, what a love story, what a marriage. I mean, real insight there. Leon, I think I'm going to go back and I'm not sure I ever read the book about Alice. I think I would like to read that. It's February. It's the time of love. I think it would be a lovely, lovely choice in my reading selections. Yes.
Yeah. And I remember when he came in, we had a little sign for him and snacks. We were so honored to have him in the studio at ABC Radio there in the Radio Disney building. So that was fun. And then the final segment, Julie, is my birthday is the 19th of February. And so it's a little birthday thing that you're not on this show, but Liz, Sheila, and Monica are. But I had completely forgotten this. Oof, time. Oof, memory. I had a very special hero of mine do a birthday message for me, or our producer did, Courtney. Mm-hmm. And so we would play it every year on the show. And I had totally forgot about it until I heard this segment again. And it's figure skater Michelle Kwan.
I know.
So, I love her.
I
love her. I still love her. And you know what she does now? Do you know what Michelle Kwan does now?
What's the update?
She is a U.S. ambassador to Belize.
Oh, you know, I did know that.
Yes. So she's she works at the State Department. She's legit. She's not just a donor. For many years, she went to grad school, has worked in international relations, and so was appointed by the current administration to be the U.S. ambassador to Belize. So there you go. So happy birthday. But I just wanted to explain why I'm not that super impressed, because it was 5 years in a row that we played this snippet, but it's still fun to hear.
Okay. Well, is she coming back for this year? I don't know if you're going to make it through Valentine's Day again with the vortex, Ash Wednesday, Valentine's, Lunar New Year. But if you do, I wish you a very happy birthday, sister.
Thank you very much, Shirley. I'm going to be spending my birthday refinishing my floors in my house. Oh. So it's going to be nice.
What a present.
Such a present. I mean, you only do that once every couple of decades, because so much work to move all the furniture out of your house. So that's what we'll be doing this upcoming weekend, and then celebrating my birthday with the refinisher showing up. So excited about that. All right. This is our Satellite Sisters remix. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to you for supporting the sponsors. Does make it possible for us to continue to do these remixes and continue to host the show on our website and various platforms. We really appreciate all the downloads and all the listens still and always. Thanks. All right, Jill, have a great week.
You too, Leanne.
And don't forget, call your satellite sister.
Well, there were a couple of wedding announcements in the Sunday Style section of the New York Times that I felt we must speak out against. Because I read the wedding announcements, I don't know those people, Liz. I'm never going to meet the people in the Sunday Style wedding announcement section. And yet, I want to live vicariously through them for just a little bit. I had my wedding. There won't be any more. It's done. It's over. I've moved on. Okay? But I like to know that there are people out there falling in love and starting a new life. And they're doing it in a way that's romantic and winning and fun. And recently, there have just been some heinous wedding announcements in the New York Times. You know, big, full page, like, pictures and stuff of people who had, like, extramarital affairs. Clearly
right.
described in the wedding announcement.
They described the story of how they met and fell in love. Oh, by the way, they were both married to other people at the time. Oh, isn't that romantic?
No, it's not romantic.
We had to speak out against that, didn't we, Leah?
Yes, we did, Monica. So this week in the New York Times, I am happy to report there were sensational wedding announcements.
Oh, good.
Not a one includes an extramarital affair. No man is wearing a kilt. It's absolutely fantastic. So Monica and I both wanted to single out a couple of fantastic romantic stories. First of all, Lauren Dawson and Andrew Fortag. Congratulations. Good for you guys. Liz, they were both chefs in New York. One's a chef, one's a pastry chef. They worked at different restaurants.
Oh.
Now, here's what I love about Lauren and Andrew. They met when they were involved with other people, boyfriends and girlfriends. But Liz, they didn't do anything about it.
Oh.
Thank you very much, Lauren and Andrew.
And it specifies that in the wedding announcement?
It does. It said they were both involved with other people, but they enjoyed talking to each other at industry events and when they would see each other. And they just had this little spark, but nothing happened. Nothing happened, Lauren and Andrew. That's why you're being featured today.
Well, that's romantic, too, because they're two people that work killer schedules.
Right.
They said that was kind of what drew them together, that their first dates were like at midnight after they had gotten off work, you know, and they would go out to dinner or they would go home to one of their apartments and just sort of sit up and talk and watch movies. So they understood each other's lifestyle.
And you'll see in many of this week's wedding announcements, Liz, one date, all it took. And then that's it.
Really?
They were never separated. All right, Monica, which one
I
did
imagine
you
that
like?
Would be a good wedding to attend, too, food-wise.
Okay.
If you were the guest at the wedding, you'd enjoy that.
They did describe the menu, Liz, extensively in that announcement. Okay, Lee, and the one I loved, the darling couple, Catherine Wilson and Stephen May. They have never been married before. Neither has been engaged or married before. The bride is 56. She works in an executive search firm in Washington, D.C. The bridegroom is 75.
Really?
Okay. He's a writer. He writes about painting and sculpture. They said they are neighbors in a co-op apartment building in Washington, D.C. They began dating there 13 years ago. So for 13 years, they have gone up and down one flight of stairs to visit each other. That's all it said, visit.
Right.
Okay. Then finally, last November, Mr. May, 75, proposed to her. And she wondered what took him so long. And he said, I guess I asked myself that too. And he said, you know, you have to wait until the chemistry seems right. And now it seems like a natural progression. It was just more fun to be together all the time than to commute up and down the stairs. So, and she said, it's never too late to make someone happy. 56, 73, 75 newlyweds.
Yeah,
I love that.
See, another excellent wedding.
That's the way you want them to be.
All right, Heather Frank, Todd Olson, congratulations to the two of you. Here's a couple with a bright financial future. She's a freelance violinist, and he's a Latin tutor. All right, good luck to you guys.
But they're young, and they're in love.
They're young, and they're in love. Fantastic. Also, here's a couple. Sterling Odom, that's the woman, and Jonathan Lankin. Okay, love this. They're both triathletes. They met on a ski trip through mutual friends. But when he popped the question, she said, can I ask you a few questions first? Can we have a dog? That's what she said before she would agree to marry him. Can we have a dog? And then Monica, the best.
Okay, just one more. Patricia Seglio and Bruce Johnson. He saw her at a pizza parlor. She was with her mother and her grandmother. He was with his 15-year-old daughter. Again, both divorced couples, okay? They're free and clear. He said to his daughter, look at that beautiful woman. He went up and he tapped her on the shoulder when she was in the parking lot, and he said, if you ever feel like getting together, call me. She never did. She was back in that area of New York a year later. She was walking in front of the pizza parlor. He saw her, and they have never been apart since.
Oh, I'm getting chills.
Then he fell in love.
Liz, you know I am now just a devotee to my prose regimen, right? My hair care regimen.
I know that, Leon, I'm looking at your hair right now on Zoom. Even on Zoom, your hair looks fantastic.
I'm in training for this book tour, Liz.
Perfect. Yeah.
I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be, you know, seeing people and photos will be taken. And I want to look great. At least have my hair look great. And I feel like with prose, I am well on my way. And it's because it's personalized for me, Liz.
Yes.
Okay. Prose is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do. So you take the in-depth consultation, You get the made to order stuff and then you follow, you know, the instructions, Liz, and things get better. I take my vitamins. They're for me. They say Lian on it. I do, you know, the shampoo. I do the conditioner. I do the leave-in conditioner. Sometimes I do the pre-shampoo scalp treatment. That all the time, but that is one of it's in my toolbox, my pro's toolbox.
Whatever it is, it's all paying off for you, Lian. You've just got a good hair game. Thanks to
thank you. Of the millions and millions of possible formulas, Liz, only one is uniquely mine. And that is why I love my pros. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out the best in your hair that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And pros is spelled P-R-O-S-E. pros.com/sisters. Thanks, pros, for great hair. Liz, you look really happy. What's happening there?
A lot of things going my way, Lian, but here was the best news in my inbox this morning is I got my email from ButcherBox saying, we're starting to get your next box ready. And I just love when this happens because then you click on the link, you can go in, you can see what's on sale, you can get the best value for your next order, and then boom, customized box showing up in a few weeks at my place. I love being in the ButcherBox family, and they give me plenty of time to get ready every time.
There is good communication in the ButcherBox family. I agree, Liz. They want you to be happy. Yeah. They want you to have
peace. Better than many families.
That's right. It's right. You know, we love the 100% grass-fed beef, the free-range organic chicken, the pork that's raised crate-free, wild-caught seafood. They're humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. Free shipping always, and you get that customized box of everything you want. ButcherBox, thank you so much for bringing us peace of mind, and keep those emails coming. Liz, today's offer is spectacular. ButcherBox is giving Satellite Sisters listeners free ground beef for the life of your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order.
Okay. Oh, that is the deal of the century, people. What are you waiting for?
Free ground beef for life of your membership, plus an additional 20% off your first order. Use the link butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to get free ground beef for life plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/sisters, code SISTERS. Thanks, ButcherBox.
You know, we made a special effort for you today. We're very excited to have Calvin Trillin with us in the studio. He is, of course, a longtime staff writer for The New Yorker, a journalist, and an author of many fabulous, entertaining books. Your new book is about Alice. Thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you. I noticed you all dressed up for the occasion, too.
Yeah, we did. Believe me.
Lian put on lipstick for you.
Right. Yeah, you missed that. Earlier, I put on some lipstick.
I didn't because I'm in Colorado. Right. So I figured on the webcam, you can't really see what I look like.
All right. Now, About Alice is a love letter to your wife, who you lost 5 years ago, right? She was waiting for a heart transplant.
Right.
And when she died, one of the things you write about in the book is that there was this outpouring. Because you had written about Alice so much and all of your work over many years, people felt like they knew her and they loved her almost as much as you did. Calvin, were you surprised at the level of outpouring when Alice's death was made public?
I was. I was surprised also that people didn't know her, and they always started these letters, although I didn't know her, of course. But they somehow knew how I felt about her, and that surprised me because she was really presented as a sort of persona in those writings about travel and family life and eating, and she was the sort of sitcom mom, the sensible person.
I mean, a persona, and yet your affection for her, I think that's what makes About Alice so lovely, too. But in all of your work, it was just clear that you two had something very special.
Well, you know, nobody knows anything about anybody else's marriage, and so I didn't know that it was special. I mean, I appreciated it, but I suppose I thought that most people felt that way about their wives. And I was surprised, I say in the book, that I had taken in most of the episodes of The Honeymooners without really contemplating how Ralph Cramden must have felt about Alice Cramden. So I was surprised that I got letters, particularly from young unmarried women who said things like, I look at my boyfriend and wonder, but will he love me the way Calvin loves Alice?
See, this is it. This is Julie. And I think what comes through is your admiration for Alice. And that is such a nice quality.
Well, I think that there were many things about her that were admirable, and also that she was able to do that I wasn't.
Like what?
Well, I think she could articulate particularly values to our girls. And
you were not very good at that as the dad. What were you articulating?
I was saying, zip up your jacket. That's all. Right.
Wasn't a family motto, pull up your socks?
Pull up your socks, or the alternative was no kvetching. Right. It's pretty much the same thought. Yeah, that's right. The motto for my family that I grew up in was zip up your jacket.
Our family motto was rub it up. That's what our parents used to say when any one of the eight of us, like, say, broke something. Just rub it up. Came in with bleeding head wounds.
That's right. I remember when, I think it was the Carter administration, tried out a motto, a new foundation. And I said that we tried that as a motto, but some of my family had a morbid fear of underpinnings. They were always thinking the sills were rotting or something like that. So a new foundation sort of pictured some BDI contractor standing outside of your house and saying, what you need here, I'm afraid, is a whole new foundation.
Calvin Trillin is with us today. His new book is about Alice. Did you and Alice always agree on how to raise your daughters? They're what, in their 20s now, your girls?
No, they're in their 30s.
In their 30s, okay.
I think we didn't agree on what we were doing exactly. I wasn't sure that we had any policy at all. And Alice thought that our policy, if that's the word, was to be sort of loose on the small things and strict on the big things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it came out the same. I mean, we didn't disagree about, you know, whether. I remember saying once to one of my daughters, who she was about 10 or 11, I think it was Abigail, the older one, said, can I do something? I can't remember what it was she wanted to do. And I said, well, it sounds all right to me, Ab, but we better ask Mom about it. And she said, is that because she's a fancy Eastern girl and you're just a simple lad from the Midwest? She'd been listening all this time. I said, yeah, that's sort of it. Yeah. you caught on. Yeah.
My husband uses that line on me. I'm the fancy Eastern girl, and he's just a Californian. So in any matters of etiquette or something, he turns to me.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, the Eastern people know which fork to...
Exactly. Right. Exactly. We just know how to do things a little bit, you know, better. Right.
So you did. You wrote about Alice a lot, and as you say, she was sort of the sitcom mom in your work. But did she ever come to you and say, oh, come on, could you just not... Like, that's not really me. Did she want a fuller portrait of herself in your work?
She never said so. And occasionally I write, like I did a column once about how convenient it was to live with an intellectual, in the sense that if some word like heuristics came up on some emergency exit card on the plane, you had somebody to tell you what it meant, something like that. And she occasionally said, I remember when the first time I was going to use her name in a title, which was not coincidentally just after she was operated on for lung cancer in 76. And it was a book called Alice Let's Eat. And she said, I'm not sure about how I feel about having my name in a title of a book. And I said, well, okay, we could call it Carol Let's Eat or Nancy Let's Eat. And said, well, I think Alice is okay. But, and then sometimes we would, you know how married people talk, and after the kids have gone up either to go do their homework or go to bed or something, depending on how old they are, and you're sharing thoughts at the dinner table. And then occasionally Alice would say something, and I would say, I hope you don't think that what you just said was off the record.
She was going to use it against you in some
yeah,
way?
Yeah, no, that I would write about it.
Oh.
But I didn't really write about that sort of
thing. Did she review all of everything that you wrote?
Yes, she was the first reader. She, not just for me, but often, Alice worked at a publisher for a year before she started teaching, and then she taught English, and she taught the writing process and did films on the writing process, and was often asked by friends to read manuscripts, and including a friend who had written a 1,600-page novel.
Oh, my
God. She suggested some cuts. On
just right off the top before right, she even cracked it open.
Right. And so I say in the book that she read all rough drafts, and partly because I valued her opinion, and partly because I was trying to impress her.
Yeah.
I was hoping if it was meant to be funny that I would hear her laugh.
And that seems to have driven you your whole life. You just always wanted to make your wife laugh. That's a very nice way to go through life.
Yeah, unfortunately, she used to say to me, maybe after you've been married 30 years or so, you've never been as funny as you were on the night we met.
Oh,
and I would say,
way to go, Alice. Nice line.
You mean I peaked in December of 1963? And she'd say, I'm afraid so.
Calvin Trillin's book about his wife is about Alice. Do you think of yourself as a romantic guy? Because you're such a regular guy, Calvin Trillin.
Absolutely not.
And yet the book, you know, as you say, you get, when Alice died, you got this outpouring, I'm not surprised, from like single women all over the world saying, oh, we just loved reading about your love for your wife.
No, I mentioned on a show a couple of weeks ago that the first time I read something like It's Good to Have a Sensitive Man Who's in Touch with His Feelings, my instant reaction was, my God, I hope none of the guys I went to high school with read this. I mean, I've been taking some pains not to be in touch with my feelings for years. So, yeah, that was quite surprising to me.
Because it's Julie, you were saying it's romance, but not in a mushy way.
It's
right?
Not mushy. It's not lovey-dovey. That's why that's makes it even more romantic.
Oh, well, see, I didn't know that all these years.
I don't know. That's
really
the key
impressed
right
Alice.
There.
Julie, I wish you'd have called my house occasionally and let everybody know that.
You know, you've written a lot about your children, obviously a lot about Alice. You've written about your own life. You've written about your father. So the writing the family memoir, the sort of mining your own family for your stories and for entertainment for others, have you ever gotten into trouble with that? Or did you ever worry that, okay, maybe now this is too far, I shouldn't do that?
No, when I looked back, I did a book called Family Man, and I looked back on what I had written about the girls, for instance, and I realized that without thinking about it, I had quit writing about them when they got to be about 9 or 10. And I just didn't mention them anymore. And I didn't, you know, have a meeting with Alice and decide that teenage girls really don't need their father making wry remarks about them in print, but it's just instinctive, I think, in not doing it. And I don't think you could even tell the girls apart and, you know, what I wrote about them. And so I don't think that somebody asked me once if I was worried about the girls writing about me.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, no, I'm not worried about it at all, because when they were 5 and 8, I had them sign a non-disclosure agreement. Nothing complicated. I think it was the one they use in Buckingham Palace for servants. I just said, you know, just sign where Daddy says to sign. The little one couldn't write, but I said, just make a sign.
Just an X here.
Right.
A little smiley face right
smiley
there on the
face.
Sheet. Thank you. Well, we, the five sisters, wrote a memoir together, and but before it was published, Julie, we put her in charge of being the delegation of one that had to present the manuscript to our parents. Right, Julie?
Right. We took two copies of the draft up to our parents, one for our mother, one for our father. Right. And they each went up to their bedroom with right. their copies, and I was standing at the bottom of the stairs. And
right, these other cowards weren't even in the
house. No, we were. There's no. Julie is the nicest. So
I was the diplomatic sister. So, but I did hear my mother say to my father. She said, "I don't know about you, Jim, but I'm coming out okay in the book."
You'll have to worry about yourself, Jim.
That was That was it. Yeah.
You're over the side, Jim.
Oh, hey, you know, I did want to ask you for something, a little bit of a performance, if you don't mind.
Okay.
The I was talking on the air a couple weeks ago about how this year, 2007, is the year I turn 50, which I kind of can't believe, but right. Whatever. So I'm trying to get myself ready for it. Anything right. That is going to sort of bring that day in a good way, a sort of uplifting note on that day. And Joyce wrote to us. She's from Minneapolis. She recently sent in an email saying, one of my younger sisters is having her 50th birthday in March, and I'm looking for celebration ideas. Well, in your book about Alice, you have the most delightful poem that you wrote for Alice on her 50th birthday. So I thought maybe we could just close with a little bit of that.
Sure. This is the first stanza of a poem that's called A Conversation with Someone Who Can't Believe That Alice is 50. Mm-hmm. No way, you say, it simply cannot be. I would have guessed that barmen often ask her for ID. I know, she has that youthful glow that still gives young men vapors. She's 50, though. I've seen her papers.
Liz, some people say it's spring, but I call this Osea season.
Oh, you do? Okay. I like it. We can make that happen. Osea season. I'm in.
Well, you know, there are a lot of events this time of year, right? You have spring holidays, you have graduations, there's Mother's Day, baby showers, weddings, wedding showers. Don't you want to be moisturized, Liz? Don't you want your skin to look as good as it can possibly look when you show up at your high school reunion? I mean,
yes, I do. Yes. Yeah, for sure. Plus, it's a big gift season, and Osea is great for that, too. So,
right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven seaweed-infused skincare that provides results you can see and confidence you can feel. And right now, you're going to get 10% off your first order with our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. You know why we love their moisturizing products? Like their anti-aging body balm? Because it's silky. And it's a serum lotion hybrid. It just melts into your skin, Liz. It leaves you glowing, you know?
Glowing. I love the term glow up. I'm going to start using that more. I just love it.
Well, Liz, OseaMalibu.com, it's a glow up in a box, Liz. Get it. Get on it. If you want to celebrate Osea season by glowing up and adding moisture with their fantastic moisturizing products, here's what you do. Glow from the inside out with clean vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to OseaMalibu.com, and Osea is Osea. OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
We're the Satellite Sisters. I'm Liz. I'm here with Leon and Julie.
Well, Liz, we just heard that Calvin Trillin said he spent his entire marriage trying to impress his wife.
Yes.
Well, yesterday, Sheila and I reviewed a wedding announcement from the New York Times, the most heinous wedding announcement ever, where the man seems to be spending his entire life trying to impress himself. Oh, and that's all I can say.
And it's working?
Yes. We like to do a little Monday morning quarterbacking on the New York Times wedding section here at Satellite Sisters, particularly Sheila and I. And our red flag went up when we saw a man in a kilt, featured.
Yeah.
That always, you know, you just wonder, is he a Highlander? Is that why he's in the kilt getup, or what's happening? And then we went to read the announcement fully. Okay, John Warner IV got married to a lovely young first grade teacher named Sharon Hamm. Uh-huh. Okay, John Warner is the son of Senator Warner.
Oh,
he's,
right.
He's
oh.
44, Liz. And in this wedding announcement, there was one heinous quote after another from the mouth of John Warner IV. Things like, every woman I've ever dated in New York and L.A. are gold diggers. You know, they're just after me for my money.
Ew.
Of course, he only dated supermodels, Liz.
Right. Supermodels and socialites. So yeah. Every woman. He said when he met Miss Hamm, he was surprised he had, quote, anything in common with a first grade teacher.
Ew.
But then, fortunately, and I quote again, she came from wealth. Oh, thank God. Oh, thank goodness. Oh, thank God.
This okay. is the anti-Calvin, for sure.
Well, we encouraged you to go to the New York Times for yourself and read the most heinous wedding announcement ever. And Harold Nass did. Thank you, Harold. You sent us some sister mail. And you pointed out a couple of passages that we didn't have time to get to, but I'll quickly get to them now.
More heinosity?
Yes. One that Harold liked in particular. Apparently, the bridegroom, whose back was still hurt from a recent motorcycle crash, greeted his guests a la Truman Capote while lounging in a kilt on one of the white leather couches.
Oh, he was just laying down as people came in?
Yes, yes, because he was a motorcycle rider, Liz, and a race car driver, as well as being the hell master of his frat. So I guess
that's such an excellent credential in a husband, former hell master.
Yes, and then there you go. And then one other passage that Harold wanted to point out in his sister mail was that he indeed put Elizabeth Taylor, Senator Warner's second wife, on the back of his miniature motorized minibike.
Ew.
So there you go.
Ew.
Harold, you're with us. Harold, you said it could not have been any more sickening or disgusting. Thank you. Always welcoming sister mail that agrees with us 100%. We are the Satellite Sisters, and this is Entertaining Sheila. And this week, it's only one movie, Sex in the City. That's right. It's a movie. It's a happening. It's The Girls. Now, when I first saw the initials SATC, I had no idea what people were writing about.
Really?
I thought it was just some cryptic, you know, initials referring to some cultural movement I had totally missed. I felt like it was the first time. Do you remember the first time I pronounced the word felon on the air? I pronounced it Félon.
Right. Like it was a French word.
Sometimes I just look at things.
Like biopic?
Yes.
When you said that?
Right.
Or like biopic?
It's like, what's that? What is sacte? Well, you know, I guess it kind of gives it away that I'm not a hardcore sacte fan. I felt like I could have been if I had more time, you know?
You didn't have cable.
That's right. If I just had HBO. I mean, there were so many reasons why I was not a weekly Sex in the City viewer. But after what has it been, 10 or so more years of reruns, staying in hotels, I have the basics down. And I did learn to love the small screen cuteness of the girls' lives. You know, I identify with each of the women in some small way. That's right. And I resent each of them in another small way. But basically, it boils down to apartment envy. Oh my gosh, even Carrie's cramped pad was twice as big as any apartment I ever rented.
That's for
and
sure.
At least she had rooms. Do you know what I mean? So here we have it again. We have it again. We have Carrie. We have Samantha. We have Miranda. And we have Charlotte. We have SJ. We have KC, CN, and KD. It's 3 years later from the last episode of Sex in the City. And the women, they're living in Manhattan. They're living in Brooklyn. Two women are married. One is adopted. And one is serious intimacy issues. Yes, there's the same voiceover by Sarah Jessica, the same outrageous fashions by Patricia Field, and New York is a major, major character. And of course, who would forget Chris Noth, who really, I mean, seriously needed some Crest White strips. I mean, what has he been doing?
Really?
I mean, his teeth really needed some whitening. Of course, we know him as Big. So what was different? What was different, people? What's new? You know, I mean, I guess what was once the quirky, girly label obsession that was Sex in the City seemed to me like a big commercial photo shoot on the big screen. Even there was a fake photo shoot in the middle of the movie for Vogue. It felt to me like it was a real photo shoot. I was confused. I mean, did Sarah Jessica Parker actually, you know, do a Vogue cover shoot for the month-long publicity blitz for this movie? I mean,
she did. She's on the cover of Vogue this month.
Okay, well, there you go, Lee. I was confused. You know what I mean? I mean, to me, you know, that intimate sex talk, which was so great and dishy on the original TV show, just seemed forced on the big. It just, and there wasn't enough of it, by the way. The threads of their...
Well, they're married now.
Well, I don't know. The threads of their separate lives that were all entwined on the small screen were sort of loose and jangly in this movie, and sometimes melodramatic and sometimes just bland. There was one new character in the movie, Jennifer Hudson, who was hired as Carrie's assistant. Now, she's a great actress. I enjoy watching her. She's very entertaining.
but she only interacted with Carrie. That was the only person she interacted with in the movie, and that just seemed like a throwaway to me, Leanne.
Hmm.
Now, the humor fell completely flat in my theater. There were absolutely no laughs. And I know that it was blowing people away in New York, but I went to the 3:40 show at The Man in Santa Monica. That's an odd time for a movie,
it
people.
Is.
I mean, there
make
was...
it 4:30 or 3 o'clock.
It's a low energy time.
I think it was just yes. I mean, I don't think that was the optimum crowd. But my daughter Ruth did see it twice in New York, and she loved it. And you know, while Carrie's search for love was a backdrop, and all of her blogging was just a nice button at the end of each snappy half-hour episode, her 2.5 hours of playing housewife with Big, buying penthouses, buying clothes, more shoes, more, me. Who would spend that much time thinking about herself and her search for the one? I don't know. I mean, who would do that? Who would blog? Who would shoot video? Who would just self-obsess about her look for love? I just don't know. I just don't know what kind of woman would do that in
when
real life.
When you put
life.
It that way, Sheila.
Now, sisters, let's do something fun right now. Let's pretend we're all in Sex and the City and we're at a little restaurant having Cosmos, and we're going to go around the horn to see who thought what of the movie, Liz. Like, you saw the movie. Let's. It's your turn, Liz. Why don't you talk on the topic?
I saw a Noon show, Sheila. People were laughing. It was that there were a lot of people in the theater, mainly women, as you can imagine. I enjoyed it. I had some laugh out loud moments. I liked seeing the girls' lives move forward. There were some surprises. Some of it was very predictable. But I agree with you that what is cute in half an hour with all the label obsessions gets really tedious in 2.5 hours. The constant clothes and bags and shoes thing. I was a little bit tired of that. But I enjoyed it. And I hope there's a sequel, and I'm going back.
Okay, we'll have another sip of your Cosmo. How about you, Monica? Well, let's go around the horn. What did you think?
I have a lot of affection for the characters on the show. And so even though they were not like me in any way, rich, they had shoes, they wore stilettos, and they were having sex. I still have a lot of affection for them. But in the movie, I related to their tenderness towards each other.
Yeah.
I thought that still came through. I thought the movie had its moments, but you're right, it was not as snappy or as funny as the 30-minute episodes. A lot of the jokes fell flat. There were some funny moments, though. Come on, Miranda. I mean, what Samantha with the sushi?
That was funny.
Okay, well, she saved the movie, by the way. Kim Cattrall saved the movie, and
right,
we're going to get to that.
Yeah, she was the funniest thing in the movie. So I felt tender towards the movie.
All right.
I thought their friendship still came through.
And Leanne, you have not seen it.
No, but I'm just glad you called the character Big instead of Mr. Big, like all the idiots writing
that,
about it.
That annoys me, too.
Who would call him that?
It's not his name. I mean, even in, like, real newspapers, Mr. Big. His name is not Mr. Big. His name is Big.
Oh, you're getting all worked up. Take a sip of your Cosmos.
Anything you want to say about his teeth? No.
I thought Big looked excellent.
I thought he looked excellent, too.
He's a real man, Big.
Well, speaking of Big, I saw the Big Cheese on a plane from LAX to New York. Yes, that's right. I saw Michael Patrick King, the writer and director, getting on a plane. Check this out. By special escort, he was escorted onto the plane to first class. Now, I ask people, you know, you're in first class. Do you need to go 10 minutes early than everybody else? You're going in early anyway.
Right.
I mean, you know, you got your big seat in the front of the plane anyway. But I did have a little sighting on my way to New York while he was going to the premiere for that weekend.
So you were on the same plane?
I was on the same plane. I feel like I'm connected. I don't know what he would think of this review, so let's get to it. On a scale of 1 to 5 sisters. You know, I'm giving one big sister to Kim Cattrall. Her character was the most entertaining. It was the most interesting. And we heard from a secret source in New York that she is the nicest one out of all the girls, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we did. All right. I'm also going to give another sister to the young man who was brave enough to come to the movie in my 3:40 showing at the Mann Theater. That's right. two sisters so far, and I have to give a sister to New York City, my old hometown, my own stomping ground. Now, I tell you, I did have a little kick in my step when I left the theater. I, with my long new pink scarf, I was pretending I was a little bit of Carrie. And you know, that's what I do every night when I go home to my Apple computer. I channel Carrie just a little bit. I try to put a button on my life. And the button here is this. This has been Entertaining Sheila. Go forth and entertain.
Okay.
Hi, you know, I'm with Monica. I thought it was tender and fond and cute and fun. And you kind of have to go into something like that. It's not going to change the world.
Right.
It's just a fun movie about women who are satellite sisters.
If you like the series, you'll enjoy the movie. Afterwards, I went to like a Whole Foods and got lunch, and this woman saw my movie ticket. She said, "What'd you see?" I said, "Sex and the City." She said, "How was it?" I said, "It was pretty good." I said, "I liked the series, so I liked it." And she said, she went into this long diatribe about how she hasn't watched TV in 10 years. She threw it away. It's too materialistic.
Oh, for God's sakes, do not see this movie.
Yeah. That's exactly what I said to her. I said, "You know what? You won't like this movie. Yeah. Do not go see this movie." But yes. I liked it.
I the scene when Carrie is beating Big over the head.
Hello.
Okay. No, I wasn't going to give away to it. There are just some very funny moments. All right, speaking of you and Carrie and how much...
Self-obsession.
Sheila, how much you have in common with some of the ladies of Sex and the City. You're going to have a big announcement for us on the Monday show about Sheila and sex and cities and whatever.
Oh, yes, I am, Liz. Yes, it does involve my search for love. It does involve a city, right, Leanne?
Yes, Sheila.
I don't know. It may involve some kind of sexual connotations, as it were. And it's all about me. It is one of my dreams come true, actually. And I'm so excited about it. There's going to be a big announcement on Monday's show about what I'm doing this summer. Right,
yes,
Leanne?
The Sheila spinoff we've been waiting for.
She's always wanted one since the very first meeting we ever had about Satellite Sisters. I kid you not. She said she really wanted her own show. She was a first grade teacher in New York who had recently left her husband at the time. But she thought she deserved her own show. And now she's entertaining Sheila and she's getting her own project.
That's right. I may not be escorted on first class 10 minutes before everybody else, but I got my own project, Leanne, and I'm darn proud of it.
All right.
But Leanne, it is your birthday. Happy birthday, Leanne
Thank
Nolan.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Leanne, happy birthday, Leanne.
Thank you, Monica.
You know, Monica, you and I, we were just talking about this last week. I forget how it came up, but we can both remember. We're older than you enough to remember the exact day you were born. Right, Monica?
We remember the exact day because Mom, Sheila and I were playing in the basement. We were sitting on the basement steps and Mom came and she said, "I'm going now." And we're like, "Oh, where are you going?" And she goes, "Well, I'm going to the hospital to have a baby." And we're like, "Okay, see you later." We didn't even know Mom was going to have another baby. I mean, maybe she told us, but we were just in our own little Barbie doll world and it didn't really dawn on us.
Yeah, you were 6 and 7.
Right, right. And then you came home from the hospital. Mom's like, "We're like, okay, have a good time at the hospital," whatever that is. We didn't even know what she was talking about. So I asked Mom this weekend, because you were wondering last week when we were talking with Shelley Ackerman, what time of day you were born.
Yes.
And so I asked Mom and Dad, "Do you remember when Leanne was born? Was it at 9 in the morning? Was it..." Liz was thinking it was more like 1 or 2 or 3 mm-hmm. o'clock. Well, they had no idea.
No idea.
So I'm just telling you, they went back through the 7 previous births and recalling various times of day when various children were born. And Mom really couldn't remember. She said she was very, very tired, though, you know, because when she went to the hospital, she did tell me that she fell asleep and the obstetrician fell asleep. But Dad was the only one who stayed awake. But of course, he was in the lobby, you know,
smoking
cigarettes in the old days and drinking coffee. So they have no idea what time of day you were born.
But we have narrowed it down to late morning or early afternoon because we saw Mom leave the premises.
Two good choices, Liz.
We saw Mom leave the premises before school. And then I remember we were in the yard playing after school when someone came out and said, "Your mom just had a baby girl." So that was like 3 in the afternoon. So there you go. There's your window.
You know, it's close enough. I haven't given birth myself.
the time of day does not matter to you.
Unless you're an astrologer.
Right, or I guess, right. But if you're a mother, it doesn't, you're in there for so long, sometimes it feels like you don't even know what day it is, never mind what time of the day it is. So I don't know, I'm perfectly fine with not knowing what time of day I was born.
Well, we do have one of your favorites. You know, this is a Satellite Sisters, Leanne's birthday classic, who just wanted to say a few nice words. One of your heroes in life, Leanne.
Hi, Leanne. This is Michelle Kwan. I understand it's your birthday this week, so I just wanted to call and wish you the best of birthdays.
Michelle Kwan, she calls every year.
She does call every year. Thanks, Michelle. Love you, Michelle.
Hi, Leanne.
Hi, Michelle.
Our special celebrity birthday wishes, Leanne.
That's right.
Hey, it's Liz with a reminder that, you know, it's really easy to stay in touch with the Satellite Sisterhood on many platforms.
That's right, Liz. For starters, we have a website, satellitesisters.com, where you can listen to all the podcasts. You also can read our blog posts, which include show notes. And if you want, you can snoop around in our bios and pictures.
On Facebook, we have a couple of options. The first is our Facebook page, where we post our news and all of our news shows. You just have to like that page so you get our posts in your feed.
And the second option is the Facebook group, aka the nicest place on the internet. That's where you can post yourself and interact with everyone in the group. You can share, you can comment, or you can just enjoy the vibe. And that page is private, so things posted in the Satellite Sisters Facebook group cannot be shared outside of the group. To join, you simply search on Satellite Sisters Facebook group and then click to join or follow. You'll get one or two really easy questions to answer. That's just so we can make sure you're a real person and not a bot. And then we approve you. Done.
We're also on Instagram, of course. You can follow at Sat Sisters. You'll see our posts there and get alerted to when we go live. And we're trying to go live more. In fact, we've been pretty regular on Fridays lately with a follow-up Friday. Individually, you can also follow us at Leanne Dolan, at Satellite Sister Liz, or at Julie Oldest Sister.
And finally, don't sleep on good old email. Yes, that's right. We have a show email address. If you want to write to us, it's just hello@satellitesisters.com. We really do read everything sooner or later. So come on, Satellite Sisters, stay connected.